Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Okay, today we have Eric Mork and Kelly White. Eric is the owner and president and chief cook and bottle washer at Silver Bay Labs, where he does Silverlight programming, Windows Phone programming, and iPhone programming. Kelly White
is... Thank you, sir.
Good to have you here, Eric. Kelly is a Windows Phone MVP who's been creating apps and rumor is actually making money at it. So that's something I definitely want to talk about. How are you doing, Kelly?
Good. Good to be here.
It's good to have both of you here. I know the two
Thank
of you,
you
work
sir.
Together from time to time. Is the work that you do most of these days mostly on Windows Phone, on Silverlight, or a mix, or...
Yeah, you know, up to today, a lot of the paying client work has been Silverlight Desktop. That's really been our bread and butter. Lately, we've been getting into Windows Phone 7. Kelly is an entrepreneur at heart. He loves the idea of making the next what, like Facebook, Kelly? What do you want to make?
The next, Angry Birds.
So we've both put out a couple of Windows Phone apps. We're going to be putting out some iOS, that is iPad and iPhone applications here pretty soon as well. So kind of a mixed bag. It's a good world to be in, though.
When you put out iPhone apps and Windows Phone apps, are they the same app with a different spin, or are they separate apps entirely?
Mostly they're going to be different. We're going to have one that's going to be the same, but it's not out yet on the Apple side. So, but that... I think what you're getting at is, you know, what's an apples to apples comparison, you know, for apps and incomes and stuff, right? And we're really interested to find that out.
Well, one of the questions that I have is, if you have an app on one of the systems and you decide to move it over to the other, so you have a WinPhone app and you want to move it to iPhone or vice versa, are you looking at 100% of the work or 50% of the work or 10%? How much can you reuse?
Kelly, this is probably you. So
that's 150%.
That doesn't make any sense.
Because you got no. It's a lot of, man. I mean, it's 80% of the work, Jesse. I mean, so the game that we did, right? The Soak Your Head game that we originally built in iOS and then never got it released because we were waiting for design assets. But we did go ahead and finish and release it for the Windows Phone. I mean, the concept is the same. The algorithm's the same. But I mean, the code is not really. I mean, you know, some function structures, some general coding structures, concepts, you know, flows are similar, but no. I mean, and then the UI, you know, we really want this to look and feel like a native Windows Phone app, so it's going to have a Metro twist to it, whereas on the iOS, it's going to have a different twist to it.
So really, you're getting very little, something like 20% reuse, and otherwise, you're really rewriting the application.
For that scenario, yes.
Yeah, that's not the popular story right now. A lot of people are talking about how easy it is, and we just haven't found that to be the case. Yeah, I mean, the code's just completely different.
Yes, although I wonder if some of that has to do with the fact that you're building a game as opposed to building more of a line of business application for the phone.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an interesting thought. I mean...
And so that's a good way to blow it off and say, wrong, still your turn.
So, I mean, the Doodle God guys, right? So their Doodle God app looks on the Windows Phone the same as it does on the iPhone, right? And so there's some reuse there, you know, more so than what we have. We had, you know, the games and the apps looking different on the different platforms.
Right, so even different assets. So you might get some reuse out of some scenarios, but by and large, you know, you're rewriting it on different platforms. And that's one of the things that clients come to us with is, well, how can we have this be the same across the different platforms? You know, is that going to be HTML5? Is that going to be something like PhoneGap? These different tools that allow you to write cross mobile device applications I don't buy it. I don't find those applications are very good, just to put it out there.
So would you say that you have, at this point, extensive experience in both operating systems, and I can ask you about the difference in your experience in working with each of the two?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I don't think we're quite as deep into the iOS world yet, but yeah, certainly we've tackled most of the common problems out there.
Now, rumor is that the iOS tools have suddenly gotten a lot better and a lot more manageable.
So they went from Xcode 3 dot whatever to Xcode 4, and it's basically the same, and it's a beautiful IDE. I mean, if you're looking for an IDE that's amazing and has nice transitions and everything, that's it. They're starting to get some of the autocomplete and some of the things we're used to in Dev Studio. On the whole, I don't like it as much. You're not as effective, and I think that's sort of the general sentiment from people who've used both. And as far as the difference between Xcode 3 to Xcode 4, gosh, I don't know. I mean, there's maybe a bit of a performance increase. They went from an older compiler, GCC, which they couldn't touch because it's GPL licensed, and then they went to LLVM, which is a different compiler and has a different license, so they could actually crack it open and help do some of their syntax and autocomplete and red squigglies and stuff like that.
So let me back you up. When you say it's a beautiful IDE, do you mean aesthetically it's beautiful, or from a performance and working programmer's point of view, it's beautiful?
Yeah, no, I mean, just visually, it looks really nice, right? Which isn't going to carry a lot of water with the folks we know, probably. But it's surprisingly pleasant to work in that IDE for that reason.
But at least my experience, and again, this is back with the earlier version, is that getting some things done that are fairly trivial and easy in Visual Studio can be a lot harder in the iOS development environment. At least that was my experience. Now, I admit that I have limited experience with developing for iOS. Is that just a question of getting used to the iOS development environment and getting good at it?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a little of both. So part of it is you just have to, spend some time in the iOS world. Now, that's all unmanaged code. It's like you turn the clock back to 1999 or something, in terms of the compiler errors and those sort of things you get. Even after, and so there's just some amount of getting used to it. Even after you get used to it, it's slower. No doubt, it's slower. But here's the thing. There's all these stories of people who came out and they wrote apps, and the Cannibalt folks, they wrote an app over the weekend, and it made over 200,000. One person made just an awful tank game. It was one of the first games in the iOS store, made $800,000. So you can put up with a lot of syntax errors for that kind of income, I think.
Are those stories still current, or has that ship sailed?
Right. So the question is, if you get into the iOS store now, how much are you making? It's a little hard to tell. I don't know. Do you have a sense of that, Kelly?
That ship has sailed. It's gone.
you are a big Microsoft supporter, Kelly. I love it.
So, Kelly, your thinking is that the opportunity right now is in the Windows Phone marketplace?
I think there's opportunity in both, right? A really good game or a really good app with really good UX is going to sell wherever it's at. It's going to rise to the top above the cruft there. There's a lot more visibility in the Windows Phone marketplace. It's easy to get up on top and be a top app right now because you're not competing with as many, but getting paid as much.
I'm doing my share of putting in really poor apps so that you can rise above.
So Kelly has a really good app, and if you're listening to this and you're interested in those Doodle God alchemy sort of games, he has a game called Alchemy. It's a really good one. You should download it and maybe even consider buying it.
About the game, Kelly, what's the game about?
So the game, you're starting with four basic elements: earth, water, fire, and air. And you're using those to combine and create or discover new elements. And Doodle God, My Game Alchemy, there's a couple other games out there in the iPad, iPhone, and the Android marketplace. They all get their roots from an old DOS game. And so there's some history here, and everybody's kind of the same. As far as, you combine water and fire and you get alcohol, which is whatever. So you gotta honor some of those combinations.
One of the great achievements of mankind.
Yes.
Yeah. But the idea is that you're discovering, eventually you may unlock a tool and a wheel and build a car and an airplane and maybe you can unlock a processor and a computer and a Windows phone or an iPhone. And if you combine Android and Android, you see what happens there. So it's kind of fun and kind of interesting and just a way to pass the time and discover new things.
And that game of yours in particular is on iOS or Windows Phone or both?
So I put this on Windows Phone and it took me about 230 hours so far, including some of the updates. I spent about $500-$600 on graphical assets for it, and it's actually doing pretty well.
Yeah,
and is it going to pay for that kind of time and investment?
So it's been out there about a month, and I put out a free version, Jesse, and the free version has been out there about 3.5 weeks. And as far as paying for itself, I have about 1,300 sales in the first month. I have about $1,300 in ad revenue so far. So it's paid for itself, and I've made like $2 an hour, or maybe a little bit more.
Yes. Well, I'm going to keep an eye on that. I'll be interested to see whether it gets up to a reasonable hourly rate for you, because it's certainly an exciting prospect. And then, of course, there's always the jackpot when it catches on and everybody starts buying it because they've been listening to this podcast and they say, sounds like something I have to have. Give us the name of the app one more time.
So it's called Alchemy, and it's a Silverlight game.
Okay. And the whole thing is done in Silverlight without XNA.
Yes, all Silverlight. The only thing that I'm using for XNA is the sounds.
Yep, that sounds good. Is your game going to be affected or changed significantly with the advent of Mango?
No, not really.
Okay, but you will be supporting it as you go forward.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, that concludes the commercial part of our show.
So let me bring up a negative thing here, if I might, right now. And that is, So Kelly walks into this as a completely independent developer and says, "Here's my application." You can do that in the Windows Phone marketplace after you pay $100. The thing that he's fighting with right now is he's about top of the pile for those independent applications. There's also this Xbox Live program, and I always get a little confused on how to describe it, but essentially Microsoft sometimes will decide to be the publisher for your application. And if they do that, you wind up, they wind up at the top of the pile. So Kelly's doing about as well as he can without being an Xbox Live application, which is, you know, it's good and bad. I mean, I think it's good for him. I think he's, you know, done a good job on development. I think he's made a great game. But gosh, you know, I really want to hear about somebody making $100,000 on the Windows Phone side of things. You know what I mean?
Well, yes and no. I tend to agree with you, and certainly we want to hear about people making a great deal of money. But if the Windows Phone marketplace is going to be sustainable, then I would argue that what I want to hear is about hourly rate return on investment. So if he puts in a couple hundred hours and ends up making $75 to $100 an hour and having a gas doing it, that's a pretty good prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't have to be $100,000 return on investment, right? I mean, that could be somebody do the math for me. But what I'm more concerned about is you end up putting in 200, 300 hours and you end up getting $10 an hour, $15 an hour. And no matter how much fun it is, it's hard to justify that over the long term.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. At the same time, you know, there's a pool of developers out in the country right now, and they're all busy doing something. You know, it's not like they're unemployed right now, and you gotta entice them over somehow. There's got to be, there's got to be that something that brings them over to the Windows Phone side, and I'm hoping. I'll tell you right now, the Android side is like a wasteland. People just can't sell apps for anything.
Now, that's surprising given the number of sales of Android phones. You have any ideas why that would be?
I do.
Go ahead. So they walk into, and excuse, you might have to edit this out, but they walk into Verizon or wherever, and they say, "I want an Android phone." And the sales rep says, "Awesome. They got tons of apps out there, and they're all open source apps, so they're free, and you don't have to pay for them." And these people are then taught, you know, that they don't need to pay for their apps. And then they go home and they pull out their iPad that they also own, and they happily buy apps for their iPad, but they don't buy them on the Android phone.
And what part did I have to edit out there?
The Verizon rep is responsible.
I see. Well, okay. So Verizon rep, AT&T rep, the point is that whoever they're talking to at the store is making a promise and expectation that Android being open source and the games are therefore going to follow and be free. And you're saying that's the set expectation for the Android market, is that the average price is free.
Totally. You walk into Best Buy, you talk to the guys there about which phone you should get. They will talk you about, you know, the different options that Android has. And then they will tell you about, you know, Android being an open and a free platform.
Okay. And is that a determinant in your decision as to which platforms you write for?
Yes. It means we don't do Android because there's no return on investment.
Okay.
Well, it, you know, some people are making a return on investment. For me, it has to do with ads. I don't want to write applications with ads. I hate ads, just generally speaking. I want to be able to sell my application. I want somebody to say, look, your application is good. I'm going to pay you $2, $5, you know, whatever, like a small amount of money for my couple hundred hours worth of work. And it just doesn't work that way on Android. And I think Windows Phone 7, you know, it's a bit up in the air. It may turn out. It may work out, you know, so that happens, but it may not too. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Well, let me play devil's advocate with you, Eric, and suggest that there was a window of opportunity with the iPhone marketplace when it was relatively small and the competition was relatively limited, and that the equivalent to that window is current with Windows Phone and arguably with Android, and that if you're going to make a killing or you're going to make even a presence known, it's a lot easier to do that in a smaller market and a newer market.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the huge fear on the iOS side is, can I write a great app and then it'll just be swallowed up by junk and nobody will ever see it? That's horrifying. And I don't know the answer to that. Honestly, I have no idea.
You notice that for a long time they were touting the huge numbers of apps they had, and you don't hear that quite as often from Apple these days. Of we've got 65 million, whatever the real number is, apps is not their headline at the moment. Of course, yeah. Finding your way through that sea of apps is becoming a business in itself. A lot of the magazines are really becoming dedicated to separating the wheat from chaff.
I will tell you what turns this thing around 100% and just changes everything. There are rumors. I have no inside information, but there are rumors out in print about a Windows marketplace coming down the pike. If that's true, whoa, imagine. You might be able to sell, you know, a couple of dollars, you know, an app for a couple of bucks and just make a killing. It might even put the iOS store to shame. There's so many people with Windows 7 and Windows whatever computers out there. How many licenses of Windows 7 did they? It was hundreds of millions last year that were sold. And
but you would be talking about applications to run on Windows 7 as opposed to running on Windows Phone in that case.
Yeah, and we would write those in Silverlight.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think that's not a bad choice. It depends on what you're angling for. But yeah, I mean, for me, I think I'd prefer to be writing mobile apps. But if you're telling me I can make a bunch of money on the desktop side of things, gosh, I might do it. I mean, so think about it this way. So they're analyzing the size of the iOS app ecosystem, and they've got it pegged at a couple of billion bucks of, you know, purchased apps so far, which means, you know, that's pretty much the size of it. Developers take home, you know, 70% of that or whatever. Maybe the numbers are higher now. Maybe it's closer to 3 billion. But the point is a couple of billion bucks. Sounds like a lot, but man, the Microsoft ecosystem is just huge. It's crazy big. Do you know the number that they estimate? I'm not sure I believe this number, but do you know the number they estimate that says, you know, here's how much the Microsoft ecosystem, so ISVs and all the rest of it, is worth? It's over $500 billion. Now, I'm not sure that's right? But what I do know is that SharePoint, right? Like, I don't care much about SharePoint, but SharePoint is a couple billion dollars by itself. It's practically the size of the iOS App Store by itself.
All right, let me move you off a little bit from the financial end of this. And Kelly, let me ask you, in terms of your experience on using both tools, what are the two of you giggling about?
Oh, you just want me to stop talking about
financial. No, I don't want you to stop talking at all.
Gotta make money, man.
Trying to move this to the gearhead perspective, but don't let me shut you down. That said, Kelly, what's your experience with having developed for both iOS and for Windows Phone? What's your experience as a developer in terms of the tools and the environment and your own personal preferences?
So, I mean, the language is easy to pick up, right? Objective-C. You come from a CS background. Most of us do. Or at least, you know, we had to learn one language at one point. Learning another isn't really that hard. You know, there's a little bit of ramp up, but yeah, you'll get it really quick. The tools, so there is so much that the Visual Studio, the .NET, that, you know, the C# and the CLR does for us. It's crazy. And so the first thing, you know, that you notice right out of the gate is you got to go back into, when you're doing iOS, is you're doing all the plumbing and all the wire up yourself. You kind of get used to having not doing that. And so now you have to go back and do that, and you're writing, you know, synthesize for your properties. And I'd rather not have to do that. So that takes time, right? And what I see then is I see that my productivity goes down on a scale of 2 to 4x. You know, it'll take me 2 to 4 times as long to build a similar app in iOS versus Windows Phone.
And are you able to make 4 times as much return in that market?
I don't know, but I can turn out 4 times as many apps potentially in the same time frame. And, you know, I mean, I'd rather, you know, have 4 options than 1 option.
So in that case, you're focusing more on Windows Phone development.
Yes, there's a couple iPad apps that I have, you know, that Eric and I are stewing on. We're getting ready to get cranking on. And the reason we want to, you know, focus on those is because we really like the larger form factor there.
So, Eric, you've seen an incredible evolution in your business, because if I remember correctly, you started out doing consulting and development for Silverlight applications. Do I have that right?
Yeah, sure. So I'd been in the industry for a long time, but when I struck out on my own, it was all about Silverlight.
And these days, what percentage of your time is about Silverlight?
Yeah, I mean, we're just coming off a desktop Silverlight project where essentially 100% of my time was on Silverlight. And now we're going on to an iPad project where 100% of my time is on iPad. So it kind of shifts around like that. But, you know, increasingly, it'll be interesting. What I really want to do is I want to strike up some client work on the Windows Phone 7 side. I want to have people say, hey, I want an app on the Windows Phone. Can you build it for us? And those jobs haven't really hit yet, but I hope they do.
Okay. And Kelly, unless I'm crazy, you were at MIC. Did you walk away feeling jazzed, or did you walk away feeling a little bit less so this year?
I walked away feeling really jazzed because I went there and I didn't really attend sessions, but I talked to a lot of people. And I spent a lot of time getting help for my apps and some of the ideas. You know, it was all about participating in the hallway conversations for me, talking to team members. That's the only reason I was there.
And it's the only reason that a lot of folks go to a lot of these conferences. Is, if it's not the only reason, it's certainly a primary reason, is that the encounters in the hallway and the people that you connect up with, the people you run into, and the conversations that you have are always, always incredibly valuable. And I know that you and I ran into each other about half a dozen times in the hallway, and no matter how hard you tried to duck me, I was still cornering you and asking you about what you were working on. So you're feeling good and optimistic about Silverlight. You're not filled with the uncertainty and dread that one reads about among Silverlight coders every once in a while. You're feeling more comfortable?
I am paranoid about Silverlight.
Are you afraid that Microsoft is going to put less emphasis on desktop Silverlight?
I am uncomfortable when I go to the MIX homepage and I see the banner image that it's Steven Sinofsky and
I. Oh my gosh, we're all fired. We are all fired.
Not, and that it's not Scott Gary talking about Silverlight.
Fired. it's done.
Eric cannot contain himself.
I can't believe you said that out loud.
We're not going to avoid the topic. I mean, there is a lot of uncertainty there among Silverlight developers, and my personal take on that is irrelevant to the question of what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, and how you see the security of investing in Silverlight for the phone and for the desktop and for the web.
Let me clarify that, okay? So, I mean, you know, this is the first year, you know, since 07 when Silverlight was announced, that, you know, Silverlight is not the darling child of MIX. Instead, the darling child is phone. And I really like that. I'm good with that. And I'm good with Silverlight being mature and grown up and standing in the corner, you know, as kind of the grandfather now, right? I mean, that's cool. What I would like to have seen is, you know, more focus on Joel Belfiore and his team and what's happening there, because I think that's where it's really at.
For the listeners, explain who that team is that you would like to have heard more from.
So the Windows Phone guys, right? And to be honest, you know, they did have a track there. Windows Phone was the darling child of MIX, like I said. They had a big ballroom cornered off, and every session, every slot for a session, there was a session going on Windows Phone where the team was up there talking about that. But the phone was held off till day 2 of the conference instead of day 1. And, you know, the feedback and the buzz there was, you know, why didn't they lead with Why didn't they lead with the phone? Why did they get up there and talk about HTML5 and IE9? And I understand why they did. You know, strategically, Microsoft has to do this, right? They have to, you know, talk about IE9 and HTML5, and that's a big strategic play, and I'm good with that. But on a personal level, I would have liked to have seen, you know, Windows Phone up front more.
Okay, Eric, and now I'm going to turn to you.
Well, let me ask you this, Jesse. I mean, I agree with Kelly basically with everything he says. I think Silverlight has sort of matured, and it doesn't need to be front and center at a conference like Mix. But let me ask you, Kelly or Jesse, what do you think about the future of Silverlight?
Well, I'll start by saying that every prediction I have ever made that goes out more than 6 months has been categorically incorrect and just wrong from the get-go. And in fact, I'm pleased to say, having read excellent biography of Bill Gates a number of years ago by Steve Manis, that every prediction that was made by Bill Gates and by Paul Allen and by Steve Jobs, as far as I can tell, they were all wrong as well. So, you know, predicting the market is a fool's game. I was very encouraged by a number of things, including the Firestarter and the amount of work that was put into that, and by what I'm hearing from the Silverlight team about how excited they are about what's happening with the phone, and by what I see coming in Mango. So to me, there's a lot of good stuff happening there. Now, there's no doubt that HTML5 is a major commitment on Microsoft's part, and there's no doubt that developers are going to have a period, if we're not careful, of uncertainty and confusion. So the question is, how is that going to be presented? What kind of guidance is going to be provided? Are people going to be brought to conclusions that make sense, that lead developers to invest in things that are going to pay off over time, or are there going to be sudden shifts that cause a great deal of uncertainty and confusion? And my hope is that we will handle it well and that we will provide that kind of guidance. But, you know, I work for Microsoft, and so I'm sort of paid to be optimistic that we'll do it right.
Yeah, fair enough. And, you know, you guys have done a lot of stuff right in the past. So that's entirely possible.
And a fair amount not completely right. I mean, you know, it's a big company. It's 90,000 people. I mean, we don't get right. We're not going to get everything right. I think here there's a real responsibility to folks who have invested heavily in skills around Silverlight to make sure that we're very, very clear and as transparent as possible about where we are and where we're going.
Yeah, and that makes sense. That all makes sense. I guess I have some fears around the sort of whispers coming out of the dark corners of people saying, what about native code? What about native code? It's like this weird meme that keeps coming up. And I'm like, where did you people come from? Did the last 10 years of CLR, you know, essentially not happen? The CLR? I don't know what's going on. It's freaking me out.
Well, without speaking to rumors and dark murmurings, I think one of the key questions that you have to ask yourself as a developer is whether you want to get good at something and do that repeatedly, which is a perfectly legitimate approach, or you want to embrace the newest and the greatest and the latest and embrace that change and go with that. And depending on which of those two paths you tend to choose, you're going to make decisions about which technology happens to be hot today and which technology you want to race after. Microsoft is a big company and is certainly capable of producing a number of parallel technologies for somewhat different but somewhat overlapping needs. And where I think we have a responsibility as a company is to be very, very clear to provide guidance that here's HTML5 and here's what this is really good for, and here's Silverlight and what it's really good for, and here's MVC and what it's really good for, and so on and so forth.
Yes, I agree. But the politics scare the devil out of me. Is
so,
that a term?
So, Kelly, was that just too Pollyanna-ish for you?
No, it was. Yes, I agree, Jesse. No, I mean, I'm positive on this also, right? And I think they're going in a direction that I like to see, you know, both on a strategic level, you know, with the browser and with IE9. Let me tell you this. I got the biggest kick out of seeing those guys stand up on stage during day one keynote at Mix and just, you know, thrash Google Chrome, you know. And some people say it's not fair because, you know, Chrome doesn't have, you know, hardware acceleration. But, you know, I mean, Google's building an OS. I mean, they're fair game here. And it was cool and it was fun to see. What I worry about is that this seems like, you know, browser wars 2.0, for excuse the crass term. And because of that, I feel like Microsoft is saying, you know, focus on this, look at this, pay attention to this, this being HTML5, IE9, and where IE10 is going. And they're doing it at the expense of, you know, look at what's already here that people are using, which is Silverlight. And this is how line of business apps are going to be done today, right now, and for a long time in the future. And so people come out confused.
Yes, and clearly there's a question of whether that's a zero-sum game or it's possible for folks to focus on more than one technology for more than one use. And that sounds so much like the company line that I think I'll leave it there and ask you guys about what the next 6 months holds for you. What are you planning on focusing on in the short term, immediate future?
Mango.
There you go. Okay. Fair enough.
Seriously.
Yeah, I think a combination of iPad and Mango for me as well.
Okay. We're recording this on May 3rd, so we're a few weeks out yet from the release of the Mango tools to the general release of the Mango tools. And clearly that's going to be a major event for Windows Phone developers. There was a great deal said at Mix about what's coming in Mango and the features and the aspects of development for Mango, including the profiler, which from a purely developer's point of view is I think a very significant release. That I don't know if you were able to see any of the session on the profiler, but it's an extraordinary tool.
Yeah, it is. I actually got a chance to go up there and work. They were letting individuals come in and check out their apps with the profiler there at Mix, right? And so I had the chance to do that. And I was having a performance problem with my app that actually Clint Rutkus helped me discover and find. And I was wondering, well, could I have found this problem using the profiler tool there? And while the profiler tool gave me a ton of information and it was pointing me, you know, in a general direction, it didn't help me discover it as quickly as I would have liked. So, you know, I think it's great, but there's nothing like another set of eyes, especially if you can get somebody like Clint or anybody else.
A team member to help you.
I'm reasonably willing to agree that the profiler will probably not be as effective as having a member of the development team looking at your code. I think we could put that in the ad. You know, second only to.
Yeah.
Well, I cannot thank the two of you enough for joining me today, and I appreciate your being candid and open about what your preferences are and what you're working on, and I think these are exciting times, and we're going to have to see how things play out.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you both.